opportunity to talk to the IAS community in general, aside from the topic. You know, I have been here for 10 years and working with it, and it wasn't that long ago that the IASs were really struggling almost for respect. You know, we're trying to say that we can bring a lot of value to the VFC program. We can bring AFIX. We can do so much if you let us help us get there. Well, at this last session or at this conference today, I'm tripping across every reference to IAS in every session. You know, you go to the EPI, they're using our data. You go to AFIX, they're using our data. And now, all of a sudden, you know, we get a lot of street cred. Now, meaningful use. Like, you know, she called us rock stars. So that's kind of cool. But then I start thinking about, you know what? We're still in the last conference room, the smallest conference room. They don't even have lights that work for us. It's like we're the Rodney Dangerfield of the immunization program. We're just not getting any respect for what we're doing here. But we keep at it because we see value. So what I'm talking about is a project that we did working with the HMOs and exchanging data and trying to explain the value of actually getting providers to continue to participate through that mechanism. What I want to cover in my presentation today is I'll discuss exactly how we do that. What is the process? Because the process has to be easy. If it's not easy, they're going to work with you. So you want to make it something they can do on a regular basis and get benefit from. I'll describe how they use the data, which in some instances were very obvious in terms of reporting. But there were some interesting things that they did that we weren't aware of. And I want to share the results of our customer satisfaction. You know, I wanted to know if they really liked us. We went out there and did a very informal survey, totally unscientific, as you'll see. But it was a feedback. It was a communication, which is actually part of what you're doing. Maintain the communication with your partners and having this relationship that goes beyond just regulatory and things of that nature. So by sending things out and talking to them, you're really sort of nurturing that sort of relationship as you go forward. First, of course, the obligatory background of what's going on. So in New York State, we did actually start back in the 90s when everybody else did. And our original concept was as a regional registry, where we had an informed consent. It was very hard. We had distributed databases. We had a real problem with getting that application up and running. And we struggled with that for a very long time. Finally, by 2008, we were able to go out and get a public health law that mandated the reporting of immunizations for those under 19 years of age. And that was, started opening the floodgates for us as to what we could do, because we were so restricted otherwise. The public health law also allows us to get adults, but they require consent. So we have the ability to store information on everyone, but we're focusing on those under 19. Also, in 2008, we launched a single statewide web-based application. We're under the fold of the Wisconsin application, who has, you know, built that original application and shared with so many of us. And we really benefited by having that application that was operational bring it to New York. So we really, at 2008, had a real turning point as to what we could do. So if you can keep in mind, back when we were starting this in terms of moving things over, a couple hundred providers were maybe participating with a few hundred thousand patients in the system. After 2 years, we're now up to 3.7 million patients. We have 43 million immunizations with over 10,000 users. Laura, how many providers do we actually have participating with us, practices? So we have a lot of people participating with us. We still are actually actively involved, as a side note, in trying to reach those others that are not participating. We have sort of a letter going out reminding them that there is a law. But keep in mind, we are dealing with already 3,000 practices that are working with us right now. So we are interested in stimulating and keeping them communicating with the registry information with us. Now, the public health law was very specific, and one of the key things was we had to identify who were authorized users, and health plans were specifically identified as being partners with us. We thought we were very careful in identifying all our partners, but I have to admit, things go by us. You might have heard in the other session with Indian Health Services, in New York State, they're considered a sovereign nation. And we did not identify them in our public health law, so in fact, we cannot exchange with the Indian Health Services, although they have a wonderful data exchange system. We're in the process of making changes to our legislation allowing us to have that type of exchange. But at least we had the foresight to make sure the plans were involved at the very beginning. Now, with the health plans, they can use the interface. They can actually be a user, log on, but it's read-only. So if they do want to look, go through our application, look people up, and use some of the functionality, they're more than welcome to. But more importantly is the extract. That's when they can get the information out and start doing the things they want to do, and that's where we know the providers want access to it, what the health plans do too. The one thing we don't do is we don't allow immunizations that they may have into our system. And right now that's something we'll look at in terms of quality, if it's something we want to adopt. We do know that some IISs do allow that to occur in terms of helping them get complete information. Some do not. Since we're only really into this for 2 years so far with getting the mandate and getting the provider community, which is really the core source of the information, we'd like to focus on that before we start exploring the other avenues and taking this other information in. So right now what it is, yes, they can get it, they can use our application and go forward. So interestingly, as I went through this, was the fact that we had no specific numbers on health plans in New York. I would have thought that was like, oh yeah, there's not. It's sort of like, well, who are you talking to? So somewhere between 60 and 100 health plans in New York are out there. Now, originally, when we rolled this out, and I go back to the 2008, we were going to be cautious with this. We, right off the bat, were getting calls from health plans. They wanted our data. The fact was, at the beginning, we didn't have it. We didn't want to set ourselves up for failure. We wanted to make sure this was a success. So we held them at bay for a while, saying, you know, let's get the information in. So when it does happen, you'll see success. Because if you have an early failure, they're not likely to come back to your door. So as much as they didn't like it and we looked like bad guys, we kept saying, well, we're not ready. Just wait, just wait, just wait. So we're looking for 2010. Guess what? H1N1. So as if things weren't crazy enough, we were actually approached to participate in a very interesting project. And this is one of those things that, in terms of what normal health plans do, this was a real change in what we never really thought would be an option. So we decided we'd take the leap. We'd work with this project to go forward. Now, what PRISM was stands for Post-Licensure Rapid Immunization Safety Monitoring. This was a collaboration among the American Health Insurance Plans, IISs, Harvard Medical School, Health and Human Services, and PHII. So the plan was to monitor the safety of H1N1 vaccine in near real time. As we all went crazy getting this vaccine out, there was a lot of concern to see if there was going to be any adverse effects from this. So the way this project was going to work was they were linking our H1N1 data that was administered from the IISs to the vaccine exposure and outcome data from health plans. And Harvard was doing the analysis to see if there was any correlation between adverse effects and the administration of vaccine. The fact was no adverse effects did tend to come up, nothing significant. But what was really important here was a successful partnership, this ability to use IIS data in a different healthcare scenario that we didn't really anticipate before, and for us to actually start building this relationship with HMOs. They're actually expanding this project. There is a phase two that they're going to look into that we will be a part of, and that's going to focus on rotavirus vaccines and HPV. We'll be very interested in seeing how that rolls out. I was surprised, actually. I was hoping there would actually be a whole presentation on this study. I think it just sort of like everybody thought the other one was going to do it. So hopefully, you know, in 2 years, you might hear about it. But since that open door, we said, okay, we got health plans, we know what we're doing now, let's open the door and let the other people in. Let's see what we can do with the requests that we've been having as we go forward. So we decided to offer it out to the other health plans. So all the people that we were keeping track of, we said no, we started making calls saying, well, you know, we're ready. Currently, we do have 11 of those 60 or 100 health plans that are getting extracts out of our system. And that's an additional 8 are just using the interface. To be honest, I don't know why they're not taking that extra step to get the extract, even though it's available. That's one of the things I want to go after and find out, especially when you see the success that the other 11 had with getting the data. But we did have the 11 that were working with our system and taking the data out. So it starts off like with most data exchanges. You give them your IG. You give them the file specifications as to what they need to do. Because in this process is a little different from what goes on, because we work with them on the initial submission. We make sure that they actually follow the implementation guide, like most of you all do. Make sure that everything's in the right space, they're filling out the right data and stuff like that. But this is exclusively, at this point, just the identifying information. We're not bothered about the shot information because we're only making the association between the plan and the patient. Remember, we're not taking under any of their immunization information. It's exclusively just being able to make the association between the client and the plan. So once that happens, they start submitting their data. They submit their master list of their members to us. So we go through our standard sort of matching and algorithm to see if we can make the associations. In this scenario, only exact matches are associated with the health plans. They do get identified of the people that don't make the match. At that time, they have the opportunity, if they really want to try to find it out, if maybe the exact match was a real issue. Remember, they have the user interface availability. They could log on and then try to do a different search to make the association to the right person and then be able to resubmit that to make the link between the client and their practice to enhance their matching ability. And once that's done, so they give me everybody they want. I say, here they are. Now it's up to them. They only get what we call the organizational extract. And that's where they go in. They say, I'm this health plan. And they hit the button for the organizational extract. And now the system will just give them everyone that they've identified in our system with their complete histories. So they're able to take that download in a lump sum and go home and play with it. So this is where we started saying with the survey. We were wondering, did they have trouble following the format? Again, I go back to be successful, it's got to be easy. It's got to be something they can do and not sweat about. So we want to get some feedback on that. We want to talk about the value of the data. You know, we always suppose there was some value to it, but, you know, they got to tell us it was really there. I don't want to imagine. I don't want to go through this effort of working with them if it's not going to be something I need to continue. My resources are limited. My staff, they've got other things to do, so it's got to be a value to them and to us to go forward. And would they continue to use it, which is tying to, is it a value? So the survey we came up with, and as I said, it's not scientific. It was self-reported, and actually we had follow-up calls to get really what did they mean and what's going on. And like I said before, it's a dialogue that we want to continue, and it's a partnership we want. So to my mind, subliminally, I think it shows that we cared about what was going on. If you make this connection, you're saying, I know you had data, but I'm not leaving you alone. But you know what? Was it value? Did you do something with it? Is there anything we can do to help you later? So it's that sort of subliminal message that's still there in making that association that's important. And like I said, did we benefit? Because with the limited resources, you have to make sure you are getting it. Are you getting information out of this? Is this partnership going to be anything to you? Because you might have to redirect your resources somewhere else if you're not getting anything out of it. So we did have all 11 respond. What was really interesting was when we did this association, I was worried at first that, you know, 11 plans, is that big enough? Well, you know what? Those 11 plans represented over 600,000 unique patients, which was about 16% of what we had in NYSA. So they got a lot of people out there. So knowing that each patient might be associated with several different plans, actually it turns out to being the plans as a total, there was over 700,000 associations. So when you think of the number of patients that go across, then you start thinking about the number of providers they represent. Well, now through 11 plans, I'm reaching hundreds of doctors with a very easy exchange of information here. Because remember, we're dealing with 3,000 practices out there. So to try to call them all up and say, are you on board? Are you on board? Are you getting benefit? There's a real economy here by going through these plans and having them do some of the work for you. So did you have problems getting the data? Again, is it easy? And they didn't. You know, I think most of these guys are pretty savvy. I mean, we have excellent support staff here that really helps them get through and works with them and, you know, hides our frustration from the phone when they're really being a problem. But to them, they didn't see a problem. So that was important. The customer didn't see any issues with making this exchange, and that's valuable. Now, we're concerned also, in terms of being successful, we know our mandate was for less than 19. So did you just search for them? Because, frankly, I'm worried. If you start searching for adults, you may not get them because that's not who we serve. And, in fact, all the plans did focus on the less than 19. But, interestingly, two did search for adults. But that wasn't a negative necessarily. I think they were satisfied with the results they did get. They understood the restraint that this was a consent-based system for those older. So they just went for everybody they had and focused really on their measurements on the children anyway. So what portion of the clients submitted was the match? So this is where we go to, as I was saying, how well did they match? So of the list they gave us, three plans, actually of the list they gave us, had over matched to over 75% of the people they gave us, which was very successful. So imagine the fact that we really do have their people in the system they can match successfully. Two plans were 50 to 75. Three plans were less than 50%. And two didn't bother measuring how successful we were. So this was really the burden on them to actually do the math for us. We didn't do it for them. But we were very encouraged by that. But more importantly, we get to the shots. Did we really give you anything you didn't know about? Was there something, you know, how did that work out? And that was great. One plan really didn't have any of the information at all. They didn't have their own shot information for some reason. Now, I don't know what that's about, but that makes me look good, doesn't it? Now, three plans reported over 75% of the ins that we gave them were new. They really only were recording shots that were reported then that they paid for. These people that are mobile, that are going to different systems, they don't have access to that, and that's a real burden for them to find. So this was huge for them, having access to this information. And so we were very encouraged by this. So we get to the other purpose. So now you got my data. It was easy to get. What did you do with it? Well, most of them used for the HEDIS and QAR reports. Let's see here. Because I have to actually write down what HEDIS and QAR was, because, you know, most of you know what the HEDIS is. Here it is. So just for fun, because I was told I had to look this up. I'm not pointing any fingers, but Laura. The Healthcare Effectiveness Data and Information Set is actually what HEDIS is for, and is a tool used by more than 90% of the American health plans to measure performance on important dimensions of healthcare. And QAR is the Quality Assurance Reporting Requirements. And in New York, that's the specific requirements, measurements that they have to share with the Medicaid and CHIP to report their measures, especially in immunizations and other areas like lead.
I know we're almost in a nice conversation, though. There's plenty of seats in here if folks want to come up. Don't be shy. It's not church.
I was on a roll, Amy.
Sorry.
I'm working the room, okay? I'm working the room here.
You want some water?
Yes. So anyway, so it was obvious. You know, you're going to use it for your reporting, you know, and actually some of them use it for data quality and for completeness of their assessments, which is what they do. So the independent assessment, seeing how well their providers do. So imagine the number of new shots they got they didn't have for, how well that reported to them. Other uses. Interestingly, one of the plans actually does outreach to its members. They actually take it upon themselves to do the reminders. They don't leave it to the provider. Doesn't have to be the state, the plan's doing it. There also was the in-house analysis. There was an identity of gaps in care. They could see maybe where practices were missing opportunities, and they could maybe do some interventions there. So I'm getting the sense of like going, wow, this is great. I'm using health plans as a great tool for me to have the plans do better businesses, and I'm not looking like the bad guy calling them. This is great. And then as I talk with the PRISM project, there was linking to healthcare issues, which was, I think, a really interesting thing and a thing we need to continue to think about as we go forward. So how useful overall? It's like, you know, Sally Fields, do you like me? Do you really like me? Well, they did. They found us very useful. For the most part, you know, three found us just useful. I guess we weren't that friendly to them. I don't know. But we all save them time and money, and that's where it comes down to. Because remember how much of an effort it is for them to go do record pulls. You know, I was talking to somebody in Medicaid, and they gave me an estimate, which I think it's got to be wrong, but they're saying almost a record pull is like $100 a record. When you think about the amount of effort to send people to do a pull, go into an office, pull the record out, Now you have to summarize all the immunizations, ripping through this thing and get the other indicators, slip it back in, the disturbance that caused for the practice to occur for all that stuff. They got all the information from us. They don't have to do a damn thing. So time and money. And the provider's not bothered by having somebody hassling in his office. So as we talked about, has it changed your policies? They said most common answer, they're going to be using us on a regular basis. They like what they saw. They want to keep current. One health plan will be using NICIS to assess their provider performance, which is linked to their incentive. So this was interesting. So, you know, everybody says, does any of the plans really pay for them to enter records? They don't. But the little back door is, but they use NICIS to see how well they're doing, and based on how well they're doing, they get the incentive. So they're not saying you have to enter in NICIS, but they're saying what I got from NICIS says you're not doing a good enough job. So it sort of indirectly gives them the motivation to start having complete records in NICIS so they can get the incentive bonuses through the plan. So again, they can be the bad guy. I'm just helping the guy get the incentives. So how often? I have five plans really planning to do this on a monthly basis. They're going to stay right on top of it because it's easy to do and they can keep it current. Others are going to go on other different bases, quarterly and twice a year and so forth. This was interesting. We said, has access to the data assisted in your outreach? And that's the one plan that actually sent the letters we didn't know about. So they told us how they do the outreach. And what they told us was, prior to the availability of NICIS data, the providers and members were dissatisfied with the process. As we always didn't have the data from prior members to a prior member being enrolled with our plan, or if the provider did not submit the claim. Now with NICIS, we can outreach to a much smaller population. They're not annoying the members. They're not getting the providers upset. There's a real efficiency here and a cost savings in what they have to do. Another plan talked about how one plan said they did not have access to any immunizations. That was the one that obviously got the 100% that when they matched. So they don't have access to the complete history. So this was an avenue that for some reason they never had the data before and they really benefited from it. So in conclusion, going back to my questions, you know, was the NICIS data of value to them? Absolutely. I didn't think it would be that much, but it was really successful. Was it any trouble with the format? No, it was easy, and that's got to be key. Again, if it's not easy, they're not going to use it, even the health plans. So it's worth making the system work for them. Meaningful information? Yes. You know, it was complete reporting, outreach, cost savings. Do they continue to use the data? Yeah, I think I said so. Monthly even. So that was really good. Was it worth our effort? Absolutely. It was a huge benefit. So now, isn't it a nice presentation, but isn't it about increasing provider participation? You know, what's the plan? But as I said throughout the plan, who's a provider more likely to listen to, the IS or the plan that pays them? So they have a better relationship. So, again, they can go forward with the plan, with the incentives, with the need to do their HEDIS and QAR reporting. They will listen to them more. I don't have to spend any time or effort doing that. So there's a real value there. Remember, 11 plans reach hundreds of providers for me. There's a real economy there. And I don't. The plan is the bad cop. They're the ones saying, you know, I'm looking at what you got in NICIS and you're not up to date. You have bad plans. I'm the nice guy. I've got the system to help them. So they can come to me and work with me and help get the information to the plan. And like I said, really, and I can't stress it, the 11 plans reaching over 600,000 people. You know, it took the care and took us out of the equation of 100 providers without making phone calls, without spending money to do letters, or us actually doing the assessments ourselves and trying to figure out of 3,000 practices in New York State, you know, what's your rate, what's your rate, what's your rate, and then saying, oh, okay, you're bad, you're bad. So there was a real help here. So we want to capitalize this because really there's no cost to it. You know, there's some time of staffing, but there's no dollars from me to do any of this effort. So why not continue it? So with that, I'll open up to questions, but not tough ones. Sure. Here, I'll give you some money later.
No cost to you to do the data extract for the plan. So is that a totally automated process where they submit their file to the interface?
The first time they do it, we help them. But once they know how to send the file, Then they log on, and the process, they do it themselves. We're hands off.
Great. We've been doing it for
Well, thank
years.
Tom. He built it.
it's a lot of work for our
No, they do it. It's just like a regular practice as in file submissions. You know, we have the batch load, and the provider logs on and submits their batches. It's the same process where once they know the format.
One other question then, so
do you mind if she has another question? Jen?
Not at all.
Well,
okay.
Two question lots will be up next, so hold on.
Yeah. Is there an identifier that is associated with that patient so that in the future that patient, your system knows that the patient belongs to that health plan?
Can everyone hear what Sherry
So the question is, after the association is made, is there an ID or something that links to it? They do get the nicest ID, but the system does make the association. The application makes associations with every provider the child has seen, and will make the association with any health plan that makes that effort to make that link. It's just my smile that brightens the room.
They didn't do the heat, but they did maybe the light emanate heat.
No respect.
Jim?
Michael, that was a swell presentation, and your swellness just exudes from you.
Oh, gosh.
But I have a question as far as your mandate. I want to relate it back to your health plans. So your mandate in 2008, did it give you the authority to go and get legacy data on those kids born prior to the mandate, going back to 1990,
yes.
Say?
Actually, we did think enough about that, and the thing we said was providers are required to report a shot administered in New York State, and if the history is not in NICIS, they're required to report the complete history.
Okay, and then going to your point about how HMOs, it costs them $100 to rip through a record, what challenges did you face in getting that legacy data? How did you get that? Was it?
Well, it's really... it's a compliance issue, quite honestly. I mean, we did, as we started going forward, allow them to go point forward with the hope that they would retrospectively add their histories. And, you know, I'll air my dirty laundry is the fact that we don't have enough staff to really be hard on them to where they are. So that's why I like to use the plan to say, I'm not seeing these kids up to date. So the provider has a more incentive to go back and start adding those histories complete, so it helps with their assessment and things of that nature. And I want to make one point that I forgot in the presentation. In terms of asking them how things were going, the one thing they really want from us now is our lead data. We have a lead module where we're able to get the lead information and the test results, and we actually record testing that's done in the practices. So the health plans are very interested in pursuing us to do the same thing with lead information. So continues with the success.
Amy, I can relate to you with your swell, being forced to say the swell thing because
I would never use that word.
Well, just before, when Michael was preparing, he came back, gave me $5 to ask him what shampoo he uses because his hair's looking so luxurious these days. had it crossed your mind at all on your survey to ask the HMOs what data they had? You looked at all the data that you provided to them, mm-hmm. and what percentage it increased, but did you ask them at all what data they may have had that you didn't have so that you could make your decision in the future? I know that in Wisconsin, when I look at all the HMOs, roughly they have 15% of their data that I've never received from any other source. So we do take it in Wisconsin.
That's interesting. No, actually we didn't, but that's something we need to consider.
Hi, Mary Beth with Oregon, and wonderful presentation from all of you. Thank you, but especially you, Michael. Oh. Incredible.
Buy them all beers.
So my question is, do you or would you ever consider giving your HMOs access to your reminder recall module within the registry so they could do that outreach using your functionality?
I might ask Tom, is that something that the application would allow?
Yeah, it does allow it. In Wisconsin, they are asking for it, so they do outreach. The other thing is we also give them access to the assessment and benchmark tools, which are reports we have in the system, so that they can actually get an idea without doing the HEDIS reporting measure as to where they stand.
Okay. Hey, Mike. Mitch from Idaho. You mentioned that some of the plans had to go back and do a manual process for matching some clients that didn't fully match with the system. I was wondering if that was a significant amount of work, if the health plans might be inclined to try to resubmit the same list from last time instead of doing a new data pull out of their system, which over time would likely result in them requesting information on children who are no longer covered by their plans, and if there's any concerns of HIPAA violations through that whole process.
No, I don't think there's any concerns with the HIPAA. I mean, for one, our public health law explicitly excludes us from HIPAA, so that's one thing. Historically, IISs were never considered a covered entity federally for HIPAA. And in terms of the health plan, I believe they have the authority anyway to have access to the information. So I don't think there's that issue there. In terms of the amount of effort, we didn't even ask that much. I put that as they had the ability, if they chose to try to find them in the system, since they have that ability, that role, to try to find the people they didn't match if they wanted to do it themselves. I really didn't even ask that question to them if they really did that or not.
Thanks.
Sure.
Actually, I have a question of sort of the whole group. Do many of you find that with the minimal funding that we all have, are more of you doing webinars in order to get your providers on board?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Is anyone here from Chicago? Chicago, Every Child by Two in Chicago just created a model webinar. So if folks are not done preparing one and you wanted to look at one, you can go on our website, www.ecbt.org. And they've had really great feedback from the providers on that webinar. And so we thought, well, we'll make it into a sort of a model toolkit that folks can use. And also, since I am the moderator, I get to unload my resources that are sitting in our warehouse. So I just remembered. I think you remember, but I think it was 10 years ago when we first pulled the health plan execs together, and we created some really great brochures for the benefits for health plans. It talks about how they'll benefit from HEDIS and saving money. So if folks wanted to reach out to health plans, we have these really nice brochures that were created with a great group of registry and health plan marketing folks. So you can just go to our website, again, ecbt.org, and then we have this whole section on IISs. So we have those, and you can have those for free, and they're very generic, so they're applicable to everyone. We also have separate brochures for benefits to providers, to office managers, to nurses, to schools, and we really wouldn't mind getting rid of them because we keep moving, and we keep having to take them with us. Folks can take those. I just had one more question, generally speaking. And I have to say, registries are really up there now. The Assistant Secretary of Health comes to the NVAC meetings, and the first thing he always talks about is registries now. And it's becoming such a great part of the vocabulary on the national level, a lot in thanks to Alan Hinman, who really supported registries at that national level, and I really think he's put it into to the vocabulary of everyone. But the meaningful use, I know Jessica Kahn came and she told us it's a really great incentive for providers. Are they really seeing it as registries being, I mean, she kind of made it like the holy grail. Registries are the only things that would be available in the immediate future for meaningful use. Is that resonating with providers?
Well, to us, we haven't gotten a lot of calls at all, but I hear other states are inundated with calls. It seems to be more regional right now. There might be the anticipation as up to this point, the providers had no ability to actually try to cash in. Apparently that changes April 15th, so the assumption is that may be more widely known now that they can get money. They may start pounding on our door. So,
do we have to market that as our own entity, or are we hoping that that will come from some other information source? I mean, I'm kind of out of that loop.
I think we're not using it. We're not marketing it. We're relying on the vendor because, in terms of, and this is just an opinion, you know, I see vendors using that as an opportunity to sell their application and say, you know, you can get money if you use what you buy from me. Mm-hmm. So I'm using that resource indirectly to support what they have to do to get to my registry. But that's just me. I mean, everyone, please stand up and give your own perspective.
In Nevada.
This is on.
Okay. In Nevada, we actually just started a series of webinars where we're reaching out to everybody about our ability to now do HL7 and explaining the whole meaningful use component and how they can implement it. And we've received a really high level of feedback. The applications are just flooding in. So that's a really good way to do it. It's cheap and you can reach, I think we had 70 participants at our first one.
Great. In Colorado, we've had a lot of vendors and providers connect with us directly about HL7, and so we've already created our specifications document and published it on our website. And then we've also been working through our REC because they're in provider offices all over the state talking about meaningful use. And so we made sure that they knew what our capabilities were. We're in kind of the final stages of our register replacement project, so we're actually not doing test files until we finish with our go-live date on June 30th. And so we actually created a memo that we gave to our REC partners so they could push that out. For any provider that's ready to attest to meaningful use before July, they'll be able to get an exclusion if they wanted to use that public health objective. But then afterwards, everybody else are going to have to submit test files in order to get credit for that one.
Okay. Anyone else have a question or comment? Well, that was really fun. Not surprisingly, but very fun. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our speakers.